Welcome to Telling Tales, a program devoted to the spoken word. I'm Ms. G. Today, writer Christy Loney reads from her book, Life by the Lynn, documenting her time as a caretaker for the Shrine of St. Therese, located about 20 miles north of downtown Juneau. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the words of writer Christy Loney, and imagine yourself by the waters of Lynn Canal.
In the spring of 1988, my husband had recently lost his job, and we were wondering, what now? I know this job is for you, my longtime friend Vicky. It seemed almost desperate for me to understand. I had a dream, and the Lord spoke to me about you having this job. But the retreat center is Catholic, and we are Presbyterians, I reminded her. I know that, but the Lord has shown me that you and Bob are the couple for the job. So please call Thomas. It seemed urgent, so reluctantly I rang his number. We're not looking, really, for any more applicants. In fact, we have almost made our choice. But I will send you the forms, and you can fill them out and send them in, he cheerfully replied. I gave him our address and hung up. The forms duly arrived. The deadline date for application had passed. They had enough names anyway, so why bother? Besides, I did not have time. Our daughter was getting married, our youngest was leaving for college, the family dog of 15 years had just died. My plate was full. I threw the forms in the trash. The summer passed, the wedding was over, our son had left for college, and once again there was time to pause and think. What now? The phone rang. Christy, did you ring Thomas? I know this job is for you and Bob. But Vicky, they hired a young couple back in April. The position is filled. Yes, 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 I know, she said. But they have resigned. This job is yours. Please ring Thomas. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, we thought. But it all seemed so unlikely. Thomas reminded me he had sent me an application, but never got it back. I trashed it, I confessed. A second form arrived in the mail. We filled it out, and with hearts daring to hope, mailed it off to Thomas and the Shrine Committee. It had been years since we had been to the Shrine of St. Therese Retreat Center, and it was a sunny day, so spur of the moment we packed a picnic lunch and drove the 8 miles out the road, down the tree-lined driveway to the awesome beachside beauty below. The caretaker's log cabin lured us to the door. A timid knock brought a young woman in response. "Can I help you?" she inquired. Feeling suddenly rather foolish, we explained that we had applied for the caretaker's position and wondered if we might see the house. We learned that she and her husband were the couple who had just recently resigned, and she seemed excited and eager to show us around. She was very gracious and answered our many questions. An hour or so later, she hugged us goodbye, and with an encouraging smile said, "I really hope you get the job." Now our hearts were more than hopeful. We dared to believe. At the interview a few days later, it seemed our being Presbyterians was an asset, for Bishop Michael Kenny shared with us his vision of a more ecumenical outreach for the Shrine of St. Therese. The rest is history. Vicky was right. It was our job. God had filled the position until our hectic summer schedule was over. His timing is always perfect. In September 1988, we accepted the call to be Presbyterian caretakers at a Catholic retreat center. Awesome God. Mistaken identity, an Alaskan governor. As we lived in the capital city, Juneau, it was not unusual to see the governor and other members of the Alaskan legislature around town. Many were on a first-name basis with these elite leaders of our state, but for the most part I only knew them as the result of seeing their names and faces in the newspapers. But now we were living at the Shrine of St. Therese, and sometimes state boards or groups would reserve an afternoon or day for meetings at the lodge. They would ask for lunch to be provided, and we would serve soup and sandwiches to Democrats and Republicans from around the state. They all looked alike to me. I couldn't tell the difference. Some liked meat and others were vegetarians, but they all seemed to love cookies. However, we were not always given advance notice of visiting dignitaries, and this was one of those occasions. I was busy working in the caretaker's cabin across the driveway from the lodge, and glanced out the window to see some people walking along the path towards the lodge. One of the men looked like a longtime friend, so I quickly wiped off my hands and raced out the door to greet him. Without really looking around at the group of people gathered, I literally ran up the steps and threw my arms around my friend in a bear hug welcome. "It is so good to see you," I said, then stepped back with a big smile on my face. Immediately another man grabbed my arm and stepped between me and the man I had hugged. I was somewhat taken aback. Then I looked up to see the rather astonished look on the man I had hugged. I realized it was definitely not my longtime friend at all. It was the governor of Alaska. I was so embarrassed. His security guard had been caught off guard and was perhaps even more embarrassed than I. After all, it was his job to protect the governor from such attacks. What could I say? The governor was most gracious and thanked me for my wonderful welcome. He asked if I would be so kind as to show him the facilities, as he was considering having a meeting later in the month at the shrine. The governor had brought his wife along with him, and she asked if she might take a look in our house. "I have always thought it looked so romantic, the little cabin in the woods. Would you mind?" Well, I was not exactly prepared for a grand showing of our wee dwelling place, but felt it was the least I could do after accosting her husband. It was really a lot of fun to tell her the story of the log cabin and show her through each room. She was enthralled with the old-world charm and admired all our antique bits and pieces. By the time she and her husband left with their entourage, I felt like they were indeed old friends, and my embarrassing hug was forgiven. I truly hope the security guard was also forgiven for not catching the swift-of-foot caretaker before she made her embarrassing, mistaken identity. They must have liked what they saw, because we did, indeed, have a group come, and it was not the last time we were to entertain the governor. A limo of a different kind. April 1993 began with a leadership retreat led by Sister Joan and ended with one led by Father Weber. In between, there were many retreats. We also had a shrine work party day. And because we had exceptional spring weather, flowers were planted and hummingbird feeders were hung. Hardly a day passed that we did not have fishermen and tourists on the scene. It was also a perfect month for weddings. We had four weddings, and a couple of them were rather unique and worthy of note. One we were not present to observe, but Bishop Michael related this event. The bride was piped, bagpipes, across the causeway and into the chapel. Following the ceremony, she and the bridal party were piped back across the causeway. Kilts were the order of the day, and worn by the groom and his best man. Bishop Michael Kenny had a special tartan stole provided for him to wear at the ceremony. He smiled as he told me the tale. I think he must have enjoyed the pipes, being of Irish descent. Being a Scot, it was a wedding I wish we had seen. It reminded me of my own wedding day, and my youngest brother piping me into the church, and also following the wedding ceremony. For Scots, the skirl of the pipes is a most stirring thing, and definitely the most wonderful way to be wed. The other wedding of interest attracted a lot of attention, especially from tourists and other visitors around at the time when the bride and groom walked across the causeway from Shine Island following the wedding. They were having their reception at another venue, so transport was awaiting their departure at the parking lot. However, this was not the anticipated limousine. As the guests gathered around the bridal pair and began to throw birdseed, the bride took off her veil and handed it to her mother in return for a winter jacket, which she proceeded to put on over her full-length wedding dress. She hugged her mom and then, taking the veil, put it back on her head. Her newlywed husband also donned a winter coat and then handed his bride, guess what, a helmet. We watched incredulously as she put it on over the top of her veil. It fit just perfectly as she nonchalantly snapped the strap under her chin. Then, with the helmet in place, we watched in amazement as she bent down, gathered the voluminous skirt up above her knees, and hopped onto the limo of a different kind, a motorbike. She reached her arms around her bridegroom's waist, and before we could catch our breath, vroom, vroom, they were off up the road in a cloud of dust. Wow! It took a moment for everyone to recover before applause broke out. Life by the Lynn was never dull.
You're listening to Telling Tales, today featuring writer Christy Loney, reading from her book, Life by the Lynn.
Ehrman Entertainment. The table was all set, and we were anticipating a wonderful time celebrating Thanksgiving Day together with friends. Bob and I got up early to stuff the turkey and begin to prepare the feast for later in the day. Then we left for the combined church's worship service in the valley. During the week previous to Thanksgiving, we had an unwanted visitor decide to take up residence in our cozy cabin, an ermine, resplendent in his beautiful winter coat. For those of you not familiar with this really beautiful mammal, it is a highly skilled predator. It kills by delivering a powerful and accurate bite to the back of the prey's neck. Having this slinky, sly animal inside our house did not give me much peace of mind, as I imagined this furry creature joining us in bed at night. However, even with our door closed, thinking this would keep it out of our room, we discovered this wily weasel could flatten itself and slide underneath the door. In this way, it could hide almost anywhere in the house, behind cupboards, the fridge or stove, and it could even climb into drawers. The ermine, or short-tailed weasel, is small and has a brown or yellowish-brown fur in the late spring, summer, and early fall months. But then it slowly grows a soft white coat for winter disguise, with only a tiny black tip of the tail left unchanged. They have very short legs with sharp claws on the toes, a long snout, big eyes, and a long, sleek, slender body, about 10 inches, with a long, narrow tail, about 3 inches, which, as already mentioned, has a small black tip. They only weigh about 7 ounces, but eat about 40% of their weight every day, so are always on the lookout for a meal. They have long sensor whiskers with which they can smell their prey. They are carnivorous creatures, meat-eaters, so we never had much of a problem with rats or mice when they were around. However, they also prey on animals bigger than themselves, like rabbits, and they eat eggs, small birds, fish, insects, and berries. They are prized by furriers for their beautiful winter pelt, but we were not interested in the fur. We just wanted this ermine back out in the forest where he belonged. Day after day we tried to catch this creature, but nothing seemed to work. We just hoped he would not appear and frighten our guests. However, Mr. Ermine must have liked the smell of turkey, and decided to join the feast, much to our consternation and the amusements of our guests. So, how to catch an ermine became the entertainment of the day. The women sat at the table enjoying chit-chat and coffee, while the men discussed means and methods to outwit the weasel with the white coat. I wish you could have seen the various traps that were constructed, all to no avail. The ermine seemed to be just as interested as were we. He would peek out from behind the cupboard to see what was happening, venture into the room, always staying at a safe distance as he eyed the latest trap, then sniff around and retreat before he was caught. Finally, the men had the perfect plan, a slide. They took a medium-length board and applied spoonfuls of peanut butter at strategic intervals to entice the ermine up the slide, to the top of it, where his weight would cause him to fall into our laundry basket. Once the slide was ready, it was placed over near the cupboard behind which the ermine was hiding. Silence prevailed as everyone watched and waited. Finally, our ermine entertainment entered from behind the curtain cupboard. The stage was set. He was very curious, but also very careful, watching with his big black eyes for any movement by the men that might threaten his safety. It was simply hilarious to watch him slowly climb up the board, holding on with his sharp claws and reaching with his snout for the peanut butter, then quickly slide back down to safety. But the peanut butter tasted so good, he just had to have some more. So back he went. Over and over we watched in amazement as he would slip and slide on the peanut butter board, each time going higher and higher. Then bravery, or perhaps it was greed, took him all the way to the top of the slide, and suddenly, without warning, he fell into the basket. I have never seen men move so fast. Slam, bam, the lid was on the basket, with the ermine inside. The show was over and announced a great success with loud applause, cheers, and peals of laughter from the audience. However, Gran Maloney was quite distressed when she realized the ermine was to be put outside. "Oh, no," she cried. "It is so cold outside." "He will be just fine," we assured her. "He has a wonderful winter coat to keep him warm." More coffee and pie ended a wonderful Thanksgiving day. As our guests bundled up for their departure, one couple said, "Before we came for dinner, we had been talking about what to write in our annual Christmas letter, and realized we really had nothing much in the way of adventure to share. Now we have a wonderful ermine entertainment tale to tell." As we said before, life by the Lynn was never dull, and often the source of great entertainment, thanks to God's incorrigible creatures, like the ermine.
I love the wind. I love the wild weather. I grew up in the Shetland Islands, and you can see forever because there are no trees. It's windswept and wild, and heather and moor and Shetland ponies and sheep and peat banks, and the North Sea is wild, and the waves just come crashing in. It's got the highest cliffs in the British Isles or in the Shetlands. That's where I grew up, and I think I just have such a... I just love the sea, the sound of the sea crashing in on the ocean rocks. I don't know, I just love it. And I like to go out into the wind and just let it blow me around. This one is titled Creation. Back in February 1994, I was sitting in the living room of our log cabin home, looking out the window, and was struck by the wonder and glory of God's creation as I watched the waves come crashing in on the beach nearby. I picked up my journal and wrote these words: "As a wave nears the shore,
it explodes in one accumulated burst of energy. Then spent, it spreads itself on rock and sand until nothing is left but foam. But no, not so. Yes, it is true it leaves its mark of where it's been, but turning, it recedes to join the depths of other waves. And gaining strength, deep cries to deep, until once again, with strength restored, it flows full force with goal in sight, and breaks itself once more on sand and shore. With mesmerizing repetition, again and again, all day long, the waves replay their age-old pattern of life since time began. Awesome energy, exploding beauty, pulsating power, white-capped wonder, endless flowing, the sea. It calls to me, come. So I did. Out to the glory of a white-capped day I went. I stopped my journaling, put on my coat and boots, my wolfskin fur hat, my warm Shetland wool mittens, and with camera in hand, I stepped off the porch into the snow. The wind had died down and the sun was warm on my face. What a day! The snow spilled over the top of my winter wellies as I crossed the parking lot and finally made it to the pathway and across the causeway. The sound of waves crashing on the rocks filled the cool air, and the sun made the snow and water dance with life as the wind suddenly picked up both and tossed them in the air. I wanted to yell, hello, to the whole wide world and hug the sea and sky. I felt I could fly to the top of the snow-capped mountains across the water and long to ride the waves to shore. It was the kind of day I wished would last forever. It was a day to lock in the jewel box of my heart, to take out and enjoy again and again, reliving the glory of God's creation when life needed a lift. I write because the words are just in me waiting to be born, waiting to be birthed. I write because I think it's just a God-given gift. And when I pick up the pen, sometimes I feel it's not me writing at all. I have a thought in my head, and so I pick up the pen to start writing, and the words just come. Sometimes the first few words are maybe pre-thought, but then the pen just takes over. And I sometimes read afterwards what I've written and I think, whoa, I can't do that. And I'm amazed at what's on the page. It's exciting. I love writing. The candle ceremony. One of the things we did as caretakers twice a day, morning and evening, was walk out across the causeway to Shrine Island to the stone chapel. It was our responsibility to lock or unlock the door. We were the keepers of the key, a very large metal key to the massive wooden door. It was something we really enjoyed doing. The building was left open during the day for visitors to enter and have a time of prayer and contemplation, as well as read the history of the place or browse through the pages of a wedding album. Not only did we lock and unlock the massive wooden door with the huge key, we also kept the floor swept, the pews dusted and polished, the heat turned on and off, and any other things needing attention. Another daily chore was to light the candles on the altar each morning and be sure they were extinguished in the evening. On one of our first days in our caretaking career, a good Catholic friend, Mary Horton, came out with me to open the building. As we walked into the chapel, she went forward to the altar and lit the candles. Then she picked up a bell sitting on a table nearby and rang it a couple of times before replacing it back in its place. We were new to the ways of opening and closing the chapel, so I observed all this with great interest. The next time I went out, I followed her example, and every day thereafter for 8 years, on opening and closing the chapel, I rang the wee bell a couple of times in what I called the candle ceremony. When it became known that we would be moving and no longer be the caretakers, this same friend came out to spend some time with me. At the close of the day, she walked over to the chapel with me and sat quietly in a pew as I did the closing chores, finishing with the candle ceremony. As we walked back over the causeway, she asked, "Why did you ring the bell?" I was quite surprised by her question. "Well, 8 years ago, when you came out with me, I watched very carefully how you lit the candles and then rang the bell a couple of times. So I assumed this was important." She burst out laughing. "Oh, Christy, I just rang the bell for fun. It had no meaning whatsoever. I like the sound of bells." We both had a good laugh. Some days later, at the farewell party at the lodge, Mary came over and handed me a wee package. Inside, wrapped in tissue paper, was a beautiful brass bell with a wooden handle. Inscribed on the side are the words, "Caretakers, Bob and Christy Loney, October 88 to June 96. I still have that precious wee bell sitting on the buffet in our dining room. Every time I look at it, I chuckle as I recall Mary and my candle ceremony.
You've been listening to Telling Tales, today featuring writer Christy Loney reading from her book, Life by the Lynn, published by Zulon Press. This program was produced by Jeff Brown in the studios of KTOO-FM in Juneau, Alaska. I'm Ms. G. Thanks for tuning in.